So I'm not going to be talking about insects. I'm going to be talking about wildlife diseases. But I think one of the neat things about wildlife disease and invasion in general is in disease, we've been really interested in invasion thresholds or establishment thresholds for diseases, which I think really ties over to invasion biology in general. And I just want to acknowledge my co-authors before I forget, Rick Horan and Graham Hickling. And a lot of this work actually started from some bioeconomic modeling that Rick and I were doing, trying to look at feedbacks. And we learned some really interesting things about thresholds. And I should acknowledge the funding from USDA ERS and the National Research Initiative. So pathogens really are just another invasive species. They alter the way their habitats function. When they come into us, that's us. We don't really want either one. And sometimes they're successful invaders or emergers, and sometimes they're not. And if we can understand that last point, we can go quite a ways towards management. So if we look at disease ecology, there's been this focus on this idea of R-naught, which is really the basic reproductive ratio of a pathogen in hosts. We have very, very similar ideas in populations biology. This is calculated at our pre-infection equilibrium. And the reason people have been so interested in this is it defines an invasion threshold. Basically, this is the idea that if R-naught is greater than one, a pathogen emerges or establishes. If it's less than one, it dies out. And so there's been a lot of management recommendations made that, well, we just need to get the population densities down below the point where R-naught is less than one, and the thing will die out and everything will be happy. But what we've seen is that works great in a really, really simple model with one host, so a really simple ecosystem. And people have been thinking about how do we move this to multiple hosts, so something that really looks more like invasive species coming into an ecosystem where they're interacting with predators, competitors, prey, etc. And Roberts and Heisterbeck have done some interesting work here where they basically say, okay, we need to shift our focus away from this idea of a basic reproductive ratio to really thinking about what's causing these thresholds and where are these thresholds coming from. And they came up with a way of deriving these thresholds based on groups of potential hosts for the pathogen. And then they go on to say, well, you determine what's the reservoir or sort of what's really fueling this and recommend targeting these reservoirs and sort of imply that there's not a need to target the non-reservoirs. If we focus on sort of the reservoir for the pathogen, we're doing well. Again, most of Roberts and Heisterbeck's work is focusing on these equilibrium calculations, which is what we wanted to get away from. But to give just a little bit of an illustration of why this is so important is if we look here, we have density on the x-axis of a potential host for a pathogen, the prevalence of the pathogen in that host. And really, this idea of R-naught is only defined right at that point of invasion. So we sort of say, well, if we're sort of just above it and we're to the right, the prevalence goes up. If we're just to the left of it, it comes down. But again, it works really well, really close, right at the point of invasion. Simple models have this nice result that, well, we can just extend this up and the current rate of prevalence doesn't really matter. However, if we start looking at a more realistic case, we see that if there's multiple hosts or multiple ways of potentially controlling a pathogen, this threshold can be sort of met in a number of different combinations for a given level of prevalence. So we can have multiple thresholds. And what we've also learned is if there's multiple routes of transmission or more complex interactions like we might expect with an invasive species coming into an ecosystem, then these invasion thresholds actually bend over time. They also change with human behavior or management, which is kind of a good thing if it's management, but it can also be unintended human behavior or habitat changes. So we went back and looked at these basic susceptible infected models that they use in disease ecology. This comes from Anderson and May type work. It turns out the algebra is easier if you work in terms of total density and prevalence. So really what we have here is just sort of our logistic growth equation right in here. So we've got a birth rate, natural mortality rate, disease-induced mortality, and then some sort of harvest or control of this wildlife population. And then we have the prevalence. So we have a transmission term, a disease-induced mortality term, and then this just scales because we've done this transformation of variables. The one identity I want to remember to point out here is that we can say the density of infected hosts is really just equal to the total density of host times the prevalence in that host. So So what's the threshold here? Well, what we're really interested in is, what's the point where prevalence is not increasing? So we can solve this, set this differential equation equal to zero and solve it. And this will define a threshold for where, if we're above that, prevalence is going to be increasing. If we're below it, prevalence is declining. And as long as we keep it below that long enough, the thing will die out. So it turns out we can work through the algebra here and solve this. And we can show that this host density threshold is a function of the prevalence of the host that we're interested in and the density of infected alternative hosts. Now, the key result here is that if we focus on this term here, both of these things only matter if there's an alternative host. The sort of own host prevalence disappears, which is why in disease ecology this hasn't been such a big issue, because we're just starting to look at multiple host systems. So this is where things get really interesting. This is for a toy model we've developed. All the parameters are the same except the transmission rate for host 2, which is over here, is greater than that for host 1. And the cross-species transmission rate is lower than both of these, but they're all greater than zero. The key things to notice here is this dashed line represents sort of carrying capacity for the two hosts. And the first thing here is we have an invasion threshold that's really just a function of parameters, sort of our ecological parameters, when there's no alternative hosts. So here and here. And in this case, host one, the pathogen could never invade because at carrying capacity, we're still below the host density threshold. But it could invade through host two. If it invades through host 2, what happens to the host density threshold? Well, it all moves down, but it also starts to bend. And so this, by invading in host 2, it facilitates invasion in host 1, which has a positive feedback effect in the host 2. And the threshold moves down further. The invasion can happen faster. And we wind up going through oscillations, but we can eventually come to an equilibrium, this point A. Now, if we try and manage, so if we try and reduce the prevalence in host 1 without accounting for what's going on in host 2, what happens? We move above the host density threshold. It's sort of counterproductive. If we try and control host 2 to help with host 1, well, we move the threshold up. We start moving to the left. But again, because these thresholds bend because of the ecological feedbacks and the interactions, we sort of, again, we're just going to arrive at another equilibrium. So what this really shows is we can't just target one host. We need to really think about this idea of complexity someone else was talking about this morning and how different species are interacting. In this case, it's potential to host for a pathogen, but we could also think of this as prey sources for an insect or something like that. I think these ideas really translate. So the idea then is, what's a reservoir? And again, I think we can translate this idea to more general ecological systems. But the idea here is that rather than looking at the point of invasion, we need to look at the current point in time. So what we said is, well, there's actually this elasticity we can compute, which is the percent change in that threshold with the percent change in the density of alternative hosts, or of infected alternative hosts in our disease model here. And so what this is actually saying is it's the proportional reduction in population's I's threshold due to an additional infected member of population J. So what this does is it gets us away from having to think about what's important at the point of invasion and what's important at the point now, or the current time period. And so we can look at this graphically, and we see two things that are fairly interesting. If we have the density of infected alternative hosts here on the x-axis and the reservoir status of the alternative host on the y-axis, these contour lines represent the prevalence of the host of interest, or the host one in this case. And what we see is that if we hold the prevalence in host 1 constant and the density of infected alternative host goes up, so does the reservoir status. And we're interested in that because as reservoir status goes up, that's going to bring the host density threshold down, making invasion easier and or harder to manage and occur faster. But the other interesting thing with a pathogen is if the prevalence goes up in the host of interest, the reservoir status of the alternative host actually comes down. And the reason for this is that that own host, or the host of interest, is contributing more to the new rate of infection than the alternative host. And if we're going to target management, that means that our management will be more efficient or effective focusing on the host that has the greatest force of infection or pushing that infection through. So the key idea here is that this idea of reservoir status is not constant over time. Reservoir statuses and host density thresholds are interdependent. So how do we pick which host to direct effort to and how much effort to direct there? And this is actually where all our work started, thinking about bioeconomics. And what happens is that there's many, when we start thinking about this, there's many ecological feedbacks. These feedbacks create trade-offs in the ecological system. Even if we try and ignore the economics, there's sort of these trade-offs that come about because of ecological feedbacks. And so what happens is we need an additional criteria to pin down what's best, if you will. And we think that economic criteria are pretty useful for this. We'd like to do, all else equal, we'd like to spend the smallest amount of money on invasive species or something to that effect. And economics also provides really nice tools for evaluating the trade-offs. So what we did is we developed criterion functions. So we'd have an economic function here. Really all this is this would be the net benefits at any point in time. So we would be able to harvest our hosts. There's some loss due to infected hosts here. And we gain some benefits, say maybe a price of pelts or something for a host. Minus the cost of harvesting that host. Now notice that we can't target healthy and sick hosts here. It can be hard to identify them in wildlife disease situations. Minus some damages that occur from infected individuals. And we've thought a lot about this as sort of spillover to livestock production. And then we just sum this over time and discount here with a discount factor and a discount rate of rho. And then we constrain, and what we want to do is we want to maximize this criterion subject to ecological dynamics. So those were the two differential equations that I showed you a few slides ago. And doing that with our toy model, what we see are some fairly interesting results. Again, what I've done is I've plugged in some parameters here to, I think, make the illustration a little bit easier. Again, the only difference between these models is that host 2 has a higher transmission rate than host 1. All other ecological parameters are the same. And then here we've looked at the prices for the different hosts that we get from harvesting them, and I've actually held damages constant on this slide. The first thing to notice is somewhat of a tautological result, is that by maximizing this benefits criteria, it can work out that we can actually do best by not eradicating the invasive species, but by balancing it at some effective level. In this case, it's our disease. And so what we see is there's more net benefits to managing at this bioeconomic equilibrium, which is written here, than making reductions below that. And if we make reductions at 5 or 10% below that, it turns out we can actually eradicate the pathogen from the system. And we eradicate it faster if we make the 10% reduction than the 5% reduction. But we notice that the actual net benefits that society would gain from taking this action can go down. So sometimes it's better for us to adapt to the situation and manage the pathogen out there. The other interesting thing that we see is that what the efficient equilibrium is depends not only on the biological parameters, but on the economic parameters as well, as the densities of host 1 and host 2 change depending on the different parameterizations for the economic component, as well as how much pathogens out there, and the reservoir status. So how much one host is affecting the other is affected by the economic parameters. One of the really interesting things that we see here is that if host 1 is more valuable, what we see is that we actually manage for less of host 1. And the reason for this is it's less costly to harvest host 1 down. And doing so, we can get more benefits, and then it's actually easier to manage the disease in host 1, even though it's spilling over quite heavily from host 2. However, if host 2 were more valuable, what we see is that we manage for much less of host 2. And in this case, we're actually managing the system so that the own rate of infection from within the host is actually greater than the infection spillover from the alternative hosts. So to sort of wrap some of these conclusions up, the eradication might not be optimal in these systems. And if it is, we've have some other work, and I have some of the papers with me, or I can show some other slides if there's time. It might not be monotonic. That means that even in an optimal eradication strategy, there might be periods where it would be efficient to allow the prevalence of the pathogen or potentially the invasive species to increase because there's spillover effects between multiple hosts or multiple ecological interactors. Non-eradication optimal solutions may not be equilibrial. They can take the form of cycles, and we've seen this with wildlife disease in some of our prior work. And what happens is if you have multiple management opportunities, and we're trying to manage, say, a wildlife species that's valuable, we might not want to do quite enough to get rid of the pathogen, but we might suppress it for a while, and then it's optimal to let it pop back up. So we sort of overinvest periodically. Equilibria-derived thresholds simply might not work for eradication. So if we went back to the slide, the first graphic slide I showed you, thresholds defined at equilibrium at the point of invasion might provide a necessary condition for how much you would have to reduce a host population to eradicate the disease, but it's not going to provide a sufficient condition. And it's really important to think about the ecological interactions and what are the thresholds at the point of where we're initiating management. And these invasion thresholds are likely to be important for other invasive species besides pathogens, but these thresholds will be endogenously determined through interactions with other members of the ecological community, as well as human behaviors and any management actions that people intentionally take. Thank you.
Thank you.